Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello. this is the film show, I think, on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, and on digital. And if you want to log on, you can listen in retrospective anyway. And I'm Martin.
I am Denise.
Over the place there, weren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, Martin said to me, are you ready? And I went, yep. And then clearly...
I wasn't ready either. I was hoping you were going to say no. I said, well, let's give it a few more seconds then. But it wasn't to be. So anyway, we're in full Christmas swing here, sort of.
Oh, we are Christmasing.
Oh, we are. We are. I haven't even been able to log on at the moment. I'm so ill-prepared for today. So,
well, we were going to start off with a somewhat depressing and ominous announcement that I came late last week and we didn't go on air because we were thinking, oh, it'll probably not happen. But there's Netflix or Paramount talks to take over Warner Brothers.
And, yeah, it's...
This is ringing significant alarm bells in the cinema industry.
There's all sorts of... There's loads of stories whirring around at the moment. Basically, just over a week ago, Netflix announced an $83 billion offer for Warner Brothers and all of their all of their film libraries, all of their television stuff, which is there's loads and loads of shows that come under the Warner Brothers umbrella, and then that was swiftly gazumped by Paramount, putting in a counter bid of nearly $100 billion, and then the spectre of Donald Trump also comes in, saying that he's going to take a personal interest in what happens. And that normally means who is going to pay him some money? Who's going to allow him to skim the most off the top? Now, in normal times, this would be something that would go through congressional hearings, but them sort of rules is all out the window at the moment. I think the only thing we can think of is, well, he does have these things where he has an idea and then he forgets it next week, but then comes back to it in a few months' time. The whole thing of this, though, is very, very worrying, as you just said.
I mean, Warner Brothers is a significant... I mean, it makes films and puts them on in the cinema.
Yes.
Netflix doesn't.
Does it barely when it
yeah.
purely for
it pops
so
them
it
in
gets
there,
rewards, yeah. isn't it? And we've been talking about what a bad year it's been for cinema attendances, and this is probably something that's been brewing for quite a few years now, because I think all the changes with streaming and the home video market, the physical home video market collapsing. And the fact there are so many films being released and they're not in cinemas for very long. I mean, just as an example of that well, it looked awful, that Karma, Christmas Karma, which they released in the middle of November. Yet
that's
another.
That's bad Karma for a Christmas film, for a start. Yeah.
Danny Dyer's version of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, please don't mention Danny Dyer in Christmas films, because I did watch Tinseltown this week, and that is an argument for not putting anything on air ever.
It's probably an argument for going blind, isn't it? but yeah, by the beginning of December, that film had vanished, certainly from Sheffield cinemas. Mm. I think it was only one screen was showing it. But so the whole business of a film being made, being released, and making money. I mean, I was watching something earlier on today. This whole thing, the general rule is the film has to make 2.5 times its production budget to say that it's gone into profit, because they've got to cover the marketing and the distribution costs. Now, that may be all right for films costing maybe 25 million, 50 million, but there are so many films now being made that are costing $200 million. I was talking to someone in the week, it was Sheldon, in fact, we were talking about One Battle After Another.
Yeah, he doesn't like that, I don't think.
Thing was, and I think he's right in this, it doesn't look as though it's cost $170 million.
That's a really good point, yeah.
It looks like that's something that you could have made for, maybe with some tight budgeting and some clever editing and filmmaking. If someone had said me that was like $30-35 million, I could believe that.
Mm.
So the costs of making the film, and how does a film make anything back when it goes on the streaming? And that's a whole different way of getting your money back. It's getting people to subscribe.
Yeah, because we've talked before about not having that secondary income from the
So it's
Blu-ray,
about
DVD
subscriptions
sales,
and the fact is there are so many different streaming platforms for you to subscribe to. And how chaotic does that... If we're all going on to a different platform, maybe for 1 or 2 months, and then coming off of that again and... It throws all the economics of it into absolute bedlam, I think. So a completely different economic model needs to evolve, let's say. I'm not sure it's going to.
No. Oh, well, that's a cheery start.
Anyway, Merry Christmas, everyone.
I tell you what, shall we sneak something extra into the schedule that's a bit cheerier?
Is there something?
Oh, Dick Van Dyke. Now look, we don't do.
We don't normally do birthdays, but this is a big one. God, blimey, Mary Poppins!
Blimey, Governor, I'm only turned 100. 100 years old. And is he still working?
I'm not sure. There's that terrible series where he's a doctor and solving murders. There seems to be a murder every week at this hospital he works at, isn't there?
He never seemed to stop.
And his son is in the show as well, yeah. Isn't he, as a cop? And you think, well, that's the only way his son would have got a job acting.
But yeah, what a grand old but, Duke of cinema.
I mean, I can remember the Dick Van Dyke Show with Mary Tyler Moore in the 60s.
A little bit older than me, as I've mentioned.
Only a turd. And I used to love that. Yeah, absolutely love that.
Well, Mary Poppins, do you know what? Mary Poppins, I've never seen it the whole way through. It's
really?
A staple of Christmas and
it's your version
Easter
of
television.
Oz, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just that it never. I've seen the beginning bit and I've seen the end a bit and I might have seen the middle, but
Feed
I've
the
never
birds,
watched the whole thing.
Tuppence a bag. Always shed a tear at that particular moment. Yeah, but 100. Dick Van Dyke.
Happy birthday, Governor, Dick.
God, blimey. 100.
Who the funk it?
Jesus, Governor.
Now, we're going to mention a little bit about... We're not going to go into much detail because there'll be a load of awards to do in the new year and you'll be sick of it, but it's probably worth mentioning the British Independent Film Awards took place the other week.
I'm leaving this to you.
Yeah. Well, the big winner was Pillion. Which came away with Best British Film and Debut Screenwriter, among others. But also worth a mention for some of the... Because these are smaller films and you'll get a bit of an idea of new British talent, perhaps. My Father... Did you see My Father's Shadow, the Nigeria-set... family drama.
No.
So I saw that Akinola Davis Jr. won the Best Director honour for that.
Oh, right,
film, which is quite nice. And in the acting, did you see I Swear? I know I reviewed it, but I can't remember if you watched it or not. The
Tourette's syndrome. I didn't.
So the lead actor for that, Robert Arimeo, won an award for acting for that, which I think is lovely.
Oh, yeah, he was in Palestine 36. And he was terrific in that. He was...
The award winning.
Yeah.
And Jay Lysergo had a best supporting performance for the drama Steve, with the Cillian Murphy drama Steve.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favourite films of the year.
Well, it seems to me that you have been the front runner on all these awards. Where me, I'm in Christmas streaming hell still.
I just think they also mentioned there was a special prize went to the adolescence producer for Sheffield's Warp Films, sort of recognising adolescence's achievement this year as well. Lots of other awards, but I thought I'd just highlight those. We'll talk more awards. You'll be hearing a lot more about awards in January.
Yes, I know. I'm going to have to sit some of them out.
Well, I think it was good to just have a little peek at the British Film Awards, Independent Film Awards as well.
If you're watching television, and I've certainly been watching a lot of it, you'll see there's a Whiskey Wars are ongoing.
Now, this has passed me by. Maybe you watch more than...
I've much more crap than you do, you about it. If you're paying attention during advertisement breaks, you may well have seen there are two big Hollywood names going mano a mano, advertising two different types of whiskey. Harrison Ford is flying the flag and swigging the nectar down his neck for Glenmorangie.
That guy will do anything for whiskey.
Well, he certainly seems to be enjoying them in the ads. If you go on to the Glenmorangie website, you can watch 12 short films with which tells a story.
12?
12.
Have you watched them all?
Job's a job. You have to see it through, don't you?
Did you get a free bottle of whiskey?
I didn't, no. I might buy one. And it's a tale of him story, being offered this job to come to Scotland and do Glenmorangie, and you see him visit distillery, and he meets everyone, and then he goes out on the out into the glens and makes some adverts, and he plays up to this grumpy old man persona.
I do like his grumpy old
and
man persona.
I have to say, he is...
to be fair, he was doing the grumpy old man persona when he was in his 30s, 40s, wasn't he?
Pretty, I mean, he was like that in...
Star Wars.
Yeah. It's sort of his USP, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you want a different approach to this, you may have seen the Laphroaig adverts with Willem Dafoe, who must have had 10 minutes in between making a movie and has made these adverts for
Laphroaig. I've checked my diary. I've only got 72 films this year I can easily
I can do that. I have to say, it's a bit like Bobby Peru advertising whiskey.
I'm not sure.
It's a bit unsettling.
I'm not sure I want to be bullied into buying whiskey. I want to be seduced into it by a grumpy Harrison Ford.
Bobby does his seduction, you can say, in a very sort of exploitative way, doesn't he? But two very different approaches, but both actors really using what they're well known for. All I can say is enjoy and choose your whiskey by whichever acting style you prefer. There you go. We've both been watching... worst Christmas streaming films. Obviously, I've watched more than you, but I'm not boasting about that.
You are a bit, but... do you want to start? Oh my gosh!
No, you go first. I need to gather my senses.
So last week we mentioned the Tinsel Town, which is that Kiefer Sutherland is an actor comes to England because everyone hates him, and he's conned into doing a panto in the North, in a fake town, but set it's Knaresborough, and we mentioned that Knaresborough had done the British premiere. I want to take back all of that plug retrospectively and not mention the film ever again. Oh my, I sat through it. So it's on Sky. Don't. It's not bonkers in a great way. It's bonkers in a how have they made
this? What were
they
thinking?
So it starts off and it's to show he's this in bad films. They show a clip of a film that he's filming, the seventh part of a franchise, where he's a, you know, clever cop guy. And that's the whole film. The whole film is bad. So why start off saying, look, this is a bad actor in a bad film? Because the rest of the whole film is so bad. Danny Dyer turns up inexplicably as Rebel Wilson's ex-husband. Rebel
that's
Wilson
a couple from hell.
Has already inexplicably turned up as a choreographer for a panto, of which they apparently only need 2 days to rehearse. No panto only needs 2 days, right? I can't even put into words how bad it is. I had to go back and rewatch a bit because I thought I must have missed a bit of plot and fallen asleep, which is it's something I sometimes do nowadays. I hadn't. It was just that bad. Please don't watch it.
Right. Well, I'm not going to tell you the full hell of my weeks have been, but I did bottom out during this week. I hit rock bottom with the stupidly named Best Christmas Ever, which, as you can imagine, is the complete inverse of what its title says.
Worst Christmas.
And all I can say is this film is where actors go to die.
No, they all went to Knaresborough.
No, they didn't. This is a truly despicable film. The two leads in it were, 30 years ago, going to be huge. They were going to be big. 30 years ago, Jason Biggs was just about to become a big name with the American Pie movies. And Heather Graham was about to be Roller Girl.
She was the indie darling, wasn't she?
Yeah. This film is so awful. It's so shallow. It's so horrible. It's in a big house with all snow around it, with really rich people, about consumerism and... I'll admit, I didn't get to the end of it because I was projectile vomiting. But if anyone can see it through to the end and you find anything worthwhile in it, then you need to immediately ring 111 and get immediate medical advice.
And immediately log on and watch 12 short films about Harrison Ford drinking whiskey.
Because they're quite Christmassy as well. But I'm going to have to leave it there. I'm saying no more because he doesn't deserve to have any more said about it. There, I'm done.
All right. Excellent. Excellent news. We're getting the bell out.
That was a good one. Stanley Baxter, if you could remember him. Can you, Denise?
Vaguely, but he doesn't get brought up as much in this nostalgic remember the 70s.
As you were saying, you know, so he was huge on TV in the 70s, maybe even to the 60s and 70s, definitely, into the 80s.
And a Christmas staple as well.
Big Christmas specials. In the early 60s, he'd been in a number of feature films, but then moved into television where he, that was where his skills as a mimic were really able to develop. And these shows that he made would be, they'd be incredibly expensive because he would sometimes play all of the characters in a particular skit. He would do lots of pastiches of big Hollywood movies. I mean, I sat and watched one of his Christmas specials last night, and it really was something that I don't think would just gel with audiences now.
Mm.
But you could see the amount of work that had been put into.
They were incredibly big budget as well, weren't they?
Yeah, because, you know, he would be, sometimes there might be half a dozen of them of him in one single shot. And you think, well, with CGI now, that would be relatively easy to do. But this would be so painstaking, and still may not always look as good as what we would expect now. But as it, things came back to hurt me, because the one I watched had a 10-minute version of The Wizard of Oz in it, with Stanley Baxter playing every character in the film.
They weren't fast then, were they?
No. Yeah. And like the other bits in it, it's just like, it's not funny. And he passed away at the age of 99 last week. Although he'd been married for more than 40 years, he was gay and he had lived. He and his wife had lived almost separate lives. Mm. The obituary I was reading was saying, you know, he was an incredible mimic. And he also had great legs. And if you look, then, you know, he does lots and lots of these shows where he's dressed as a woman, showing his legs off. Not that there's anything wrong with that or anything. But as I say, the Wizard of Oz one is just incredible because he's the Wicked Witches, he's Dorothy, and I mean, I sat there stony-faced through the entire 50 minutes of this show. I didn't find a single thing to laugh at.
But at the time,
you would not have missed that.
Massive audience.
You would not have missed that for anything, would you?
So, I think it's just interesting how tastes and cultural references change so much as well. Like, that... That he was in every household almost.
Yeah.
And beloved.
Some of these shows would have 20 million audience figures. That's, you can't even imagine that these days. Anyway, that's all I've got to say about Stanley Baxter, and I don't think I'll be watching any more of his specials after that.
But a significant contribution to the entertainment industry.
We have to say that, yes. Trailer trash, very quickly, some stuff that's coming out early next year. One of the big films that I think we'll be hearing loads is Project Hail Mary with, what's his name? Ryan Gosling. I must admit, I always get mixed up with him and Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, no, I don't. No. Ryan Reynolds is a bit creepy looking and Ryan Gosling is like, beautiful.
There's something called... Project Hail Mary, and it's another science fiction epic, this time with Ryan Gosling waking up in the middle of space and it's his job to save the world. I can't say how much I'm not looking forward to this. The trailer's loads and loads of CGI, and I am weary with it, absolutely weary with this stuff. But it'll be everywhere, and I'm sure one of us will have to do the short straw and go and see this.
What I am not weary of is the whole 28 years later franchise. So there was another trailer. We didn't mention it last week, but there's another trailer.
We mentioned the trailer a few weeks back when you weren't here.
Oh, well. There's been another one, though. Last week. Yeah. So that's out on January the 16th. The Nia DaCosta directed second in this three trilogy.
And that'll coincide when we're back on air after Christmas.
But there's interesting talks about the third one going ahead now. Which Danny Boyle is set to direct, Alex Garland currently writing, and there's all talks of Cillian Murphy's character coming back for that one.
I'm weary of it, Denise.
I know you're weary. You didn't like the end of the... You didn't like the Jimmy end of...
And it's got a lot of bad press since, hasn't it? I think a lot of people didn't like it.
I did.
Well,
I think the second...
That sounded almost petulant. I did.
And the second film is a lot more on the Jimmy character. And it's had some positive previews already. Hopefully I'll get McKillian back.
We'll see. And Scream 7 is out early in January.
I mean... Come on.
I could also say Scene 1, Seen Them All, but...
Scream 1, Scream Them All.
Yeah, and that's... is he going back to basics or something? I think that's what they're going to try to tell you about. There hasn't been another Scream film for quite some time, has there? So there you are. I think we're both a bit tired, actually, from this entire year. I know I am. But let's have some music, shall we? Over to you, Denise.
Something Christmassy. So we're going to do this week, we've picked some nice Christmas songs. This is a song that Diane Keaton, who died earlier, just a few months ago, recorded last year, and it's called First Christmas.
All the children build a snowman. Their laughter fills the whole land. Wrapping gifts around the fire. Yet I feel all alone. Hearing I'll be home for Christmas. It only makes me missin'. When you love someone for so, so long, yet they're not coming home. I never thought I'd do this on my own. The snow falls on my window. I wish that I could the first Christmas without you here. They say time will heal what's broken, but were their hearts this frozen? On this winter night, I say a prayer for others just like me to carry on the love and still be. First Christmas without The snow falls on my window. Somehow you are so close on this silent night. I can feel you near. My first Christmas without you here. My first Christmas without you here.
That's a brief
warning. Watch the camera. The CD player's up the wall. Anyway,
so that's Diane Keaton's First Christmas Without You, which rings a little bit differently. Well, watching one of our favourite Christmas films. Well, it's a new one for you.
For me, I've discovered it this year. The Family Stone.
This is my friend Cara's one of her favourite Christmas films. And I'm glad that you like it.
Oh, I loved it.
I rewatched it last night. I haven't watched it for a little while. Diane Keaton plays like the matriarch of... she's got 5 grown-up children. They all come to the house for Christmas.
Big house, snow's outside, yada, yada, yada.
But one of the guests is Meredith, who is the uptight New York or city girlfriend of... Yeah. Beloved son, who and hilarity ensues, but it also is quite touching and serious about family relationships. And the Diane Keaton's mother character is facing a serious illness. It's a lovely film,
I think. And after watching all the rubbish that I had been watching, which is almost like the same setup, it was the honesty and of the relationships between everyone.
Yeah.
And it also, I sort of discovered Sarah Jessica Parker of this film, she's never sort of made much of an impact on me, and I thought she was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. And the fact that she has to sort of do this complete 180 in her character, 2/3 of the way through, and she just handled it beautifully. And I just loved the film.
Yeah, it's a lovely ensemble cast as well. You've got Claire Danes in there. Dermot Mulroney plays the son of...
Luke Wilson's in there. Yeah, yeah.
They're all just perfect, pitch perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were just going to sort of bat a few other movies that may not be the particularly obvious ones that you might watch at this time of year. Ones we might recommend to you, and then we're each going to pick one, which is a particular favourite of ours. And do you want to kick off?
Well, I always enjoy watching Brazil at this time of year because it is...
Yes.
I like a bit of dystopia. So Terry Gilliam's Brazil is set during Christmas, and it's all about there's all the commercialism of Christmas and the lie of Christmas, while Jonathan Pryce's character is going through Kafkaesque hell. But I love the backdrop of Christmas in Brazil.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it's quite ahead of its time, isn't it, the way it portrays Christmas.
Highly cynical.
Yes. I'm going for a Hollywood 1940s movie, old-fashioned, A Christmas in Connecticut. With Barbara Stanwyck. Playing a newspaper columnist who writes this column where she's a domestic goddess. She cooks, she knits and sews. She can run the entire household, but she can't boil an egg. She gets all of her clothing is from the Fifth Avenue stores, and her editor wants her to provide a Christmas for a Navy war hero who has just come home. There's lots of publicity about, and the magazine will do a big spread on him being given this traditional Christmas at Barbara Stanwyck's house, where he's going to be lucky to get a slice of toast. And it will completely destroy her image, not just with the public, but with her editor. And hence is a comedy of errors and manners as somehow she puts Christmas together in a big detached house with snow all around it and a dining room table you get a dozen people around. So, now, you know, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Stanwyck now, but...
Yeah, she, don't mention the politics.
Don't mention the politics, yeah. But she overcomes it in this.
I think we also mentioned her in Remember the Night last year.
Yes.
Which is one of my favourites, which I've got a lovely Blu-ray of.
Yeah.
Which is the Fred McMurray, Barbara Stanwyck, where she is... She's a bad girl, and Fred McMurray is the good guy, the good lawyer, and that takes place over the whole Christmas season.
Yeah, yeah. What else are we going to...
Well, a new one, which The Holdovers,
yes.
I think it's set to be a Christmas staple. That's the one set in the 1970s, and it's filmed as if it's the 1970s. It really feels really authentic, and... that's the Paul Giamatti plays the troubled, let's say, boarding school teacher who is left with the holdover, referring to the pupils that don't have anywhere to go for Christmas, so they stay on campus.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is left with just one, as it turns out, in the end. But it's got the Oscar-winning performance by Divina Joy. In there as well, and Devon Joy Randall, sorry. Dominic Sessa plays the young man in it. I started watching it last night. I'm going to watch it this week as well. But also another new one, only out last year, but Tim Mielant's directing, Cillian Murphy in Small Things Like These.
You're squeezing all these ones are on his list here.
I know, but it's a new favourite. Getting it.
Yeah.
Getting it in there. Because it'll be streaming this year. So.
Yeah. Could we go on to another film?
Go on then. Mention another one.
I don't know. We've got, yeah. You've got Scrooge and Scrooge.
Scrooges.
Not Christmas Karma. but most Christmas Carol films are great. And I think Albert Finney in Scrooge. And Bill Murray in Scrooge.
They all get overshadowed a bit by Muppet Christmas Carol because it is brilliant.
Yeah.
But I do love Albert Finney dancing in the streets with his night costume on. What's the song? The song that they're singing when he stumbles on his own funeral in The Ghost of Christmas Future. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's it's very nicest, Oliver.
Yeah. Well, Lionel Barr, isn't it? Yeah. Yes, so we'll go on to talking in a little detail. We've got one film each and only one film.
Yes,
all right.
I've picked one. I haven't squeezed in three.
Let's see if you can stick to that, and then I'll pick one or two.
You can pick two.
I'm sticking to one. Go on, off you go.
Me first. Okay. Well, I rewatched this year. I didn't watch it at Christmas time. I bought the Blu-ray this year on Vintage Classics, but the Comfort and Joy, directed by Bill Forsyth, 1984. Yeah, yeah. So featuring Bill Paterson. He plays a radio DJ who's a little bit tired and cliched, let's just say, but he thinks
he's talking about me. You're having a dig.
I think he gets paid. But his it all starts off. He goes through this upheaval when his long term kleptomaniac girlfriend just leaves him suddenly, just absolutely out of nowhere, and he somehow gets embroiled in the struggle between an ice cream war.
which the Glasgow ice cream wars are quite. It was notorious.
Absolutely, yeah. This is, although frightening, slightly less sinister in that he comes up with some kind of way. I don't know how or why he thinks this is a good idea, but of bringing them together, and it does involve ice cream fritters. But he's on it trying to get a story as well. It's what you'd expect, I suppose, but it's sort of lesser known than Gregory's Girl and Local Hero.
Yeah, yeah.
They sort of had a massive and international sort of success. Whereas Comfort and Joy was a bit more of a quiet...
It's unjustly neglected. Yeah. And it really is one that needs rediscovery, yeah. I think, yeah. Me?
You can do,
I mean,
yeah.
let me get me list out, yeah. One of my favourite Christmas films is Eric Rohmer's A Winter's Tale. There was these four films he made, the Tales of Four Seasons, Spring, Summer, Autumn and Winter, and the Winter's one is set around Christmas, and it's couple meet on holiday, they fall madly in love, have lots of sex, and at the end of the holiday they split up. He's going to the States, where he's going to work as a chef. She's going back to Paris. She gives him her address. This is in 1992.
I'll catch you on Facebook. You won't.
Give me a like. And then we leap to 5 years later. Was a beautiful little girl, and her mother, who was the woman who was met the guide, and for some strange reason, he never got back in touch. Although she realises she gave him a slightly wrong address when she writes this down on the back, literally on the back of a fag packet. But she's sure she's going to meet him again. And she can't love anybody else apart from Charles, this guy that she met 4 years ago. Even though she has two guys currently asking to marry her and come to, and for her to come to live with them, who seem perfectly reasonable, you know, they're not. But
they're not Charles.
They are not Charles. And she says to him, well, it doesn't matter because I won't love you. I will only ever love Charles, and so you're left with this truly impossible situation. How, you know, this is like almost 5 years ago. He obviously doesn't know anything that's happened to her. She doesn't know what's happened to him. And there you have it.
Is that... I've not seen this film.
Why would I say any more if you haven't seen it? But believe me,
I'm going to have to go with HMV again.
Get out your tissues. it's a marvellous film. If you've never seen any Eric Rohmer films.
I have, yeah.
But, sorry, I haven't
seen that one.
But, you know, and his films are almost like, they can be quite bland, can't they? But there's always a lot, far more going on in them than what you initially realise. So that's us, and it's time for the chat.
It's time. Just one track.
For this week.
O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel, that mourns in lonely exile here, until the Son of God. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel.
O come, thou Lord of might, who to thy tribes on Sinai's high. Didst give the law in cloud and majesty.
come, thou rod of Jesse. Free thine own from Satan's tyranny. From depths of hell, thy people save, and give them victory o'er the grave. Rejoice!
William Shatner there from the album Shatner Claus with O Come, O Come.
Has he finished?
I think there's a bit of reverb going on still there. And obviously the background singer. See, it's not working. It's not working. Right, well, we might have to cut one of our songs out and play it next week. But let's see how we go.
Yeah. It's over to me, isn't it?
You've actually been into a cinema this week.
I went to see Goodbye June last night. The debut directorial feature from Kate Winslet. Much comment has been made that the screenplay is written by Joe Anders, who is her young son. Would he have got? Yeah, but I'm not going to say that because I really, really, really liked this film. I think it's a lovely addition to like a family dynamics Christmas film canon. It's also very similar to me in with some of its themes and characters even to the Family Stone that we were talking about
earlier.
Right, yeah. So we open up Helen Mirren. Is looking very frail in a kitchen. She collapses in the kitchen. Timothy Spall is playing her husband Bernie up in the bathroom. Johnny Flynn, who I love as an actor, is their son Connor. They rush her to hospital. There's a scene where she's going in to the hospital and the snow's just falling on her. She looks dead frail. It turns out the character has had a cancer, been treated for cancer, and she is now approaching end of life. And they don't know if she's going to make it to Christmas. And rather than going into a hospice, they set up in this hospital and she receives her end-of-life care there. Now, she has four grown-up children who are somewhat in some ways, you could say, stock characters. There's some stereotypes in there. But also this makes for interesting dynamics between them. And really, you've got Kate Winslet is the sort of Julia, the sort of high-flying, professional, working, husband away all the time, three kids. Andrea Riseborough, who was so good in Dragonfly this year, is playing sort of a... I've seen it referred to as a fascist hippie, but she is very... She's got a bit of a dippy husband, played by Stephen Merchant, and like four kids, young children. Bit of an earth hippie ground kind of woman. You've got Toni Collette playing the sort of Crystals type lost wayward daughter who's coming back from Germany. And there's all of these lovely side stories about grudges that they've been nursing and fractions between them, but coming together to try and give a good goodbye to their mother, who they love very much. I've seen really poor reviews for this, but I really liked it. I thought it was a lovely story. It was well told. I cried pretty constantly for the last half an hour, which is what you want, really.
At Christmas, yeah.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, Christmas. Merry Christmas, everyone. But it is also, it does a lot of, there's some of the tropes in there that you get similar to Family Stone, which I won't spoil by saying what they are, but, you know, the ending has a similar vibe and construction, and some of the characters have a similar journey.
I think there's something with Christmas films, you can also, I don't think they're all guilty pleasures, because I think some of them are very, very good films, but you can sort of maybe be a little more lenient.
Yeah.
Unless you're watching Best Christmas Ever.
In which case, no. But it's about family and love and care and dignity. And I think, because I believe that Joe Anders wrote it based on their experience of his own grandmother and Kate Winslet's mother dying. Mm. And they felt lucky that they had a good experience of that. Because it's not always the same for everybody.
No.
And I find it quite heartwarming. I'm not gonna hear a bad word said about it.
I think the problem is there are just too many bad Christmas films. You know, with all this stuff on streaming. I don't even feel emotionally moved in any way by them. But I think when you get a good one, it is when you're crying by about the halfway mark.
And it is so well. There's some really nice directorial touches in it as well. And I think Kate Winslet is what is obviously, with the calibre of these actors, this cast, they are obviously people that want to work with her.
Mm.
And it's obviously been a positive thing. So I don't care if The Guardian gives it 2 stars. I'm giving it 3.5, maybe even 4. And I don't care.
Listen to that. That's controversy. That's what you listen to this show for, isn't it? Raw, unadulterated opinion.
Oh, shall we?
Show me hand down from that soapbox. Yeah.
We were going to review Eleanor the Great as well. Shall we still do that? I'll give it a quick mention. This is another directorial debut by an actress, Scarlett Johansson. Not quite the great, unfortunately. It's a little bit misjudged, I think. So June Squibb is playing a 94-year-old woman who originally is from, she's Jewish, but she's converted into Judaism a long time ago. Her best friend dies at the beginning of the film, who is a Holocaust survivor. She comes back to live with her daughter, having been away from New York for a long time. And desperate to fit in, she goes along to a singing thing, which she's like, I'm not going to that. But she is sort of coerced into going into a room next door because someone assumes that they're there and they turn out to be Holocaust survivors. So she doesn't deliberately pose as a Holocaust survivor. But then to fit in, she starts to tell the story of her deceased friend and pose as that person. And then it becomes, I mean, it's billed as a comedy drama. The comedy isn't really there. And it's a little bit misjudged on the subject matter. But she gets involved with a student journalist who wants to tell her story. Her dad just happens to be played by Chitsoli Dufour. He happens to be a journalist, a TV journalist that they admire.
Chitsoli
Dufour, but he it gives it some kind of profile, and obviously you can't really, if you're a journalist, you'll do some checks, spoilers, and find out what the truth is. But it's not really managed very well, that idea, and there's some lovely touching performances. Like, June Squibb is great, but if you want to see her in a great film, watch Velma, which came out earlier this year. It's a bit disappointing.
Yeah. But with our time seeing is all out of kilter. So Would you? Should we do a rundown of what's coming out next week? Because that's not going to take too long, is it? And then we can end with a piece of music, okay. And we'll just right. Because we're never going to get both of them in. But next week is there's a film out next week, isn't it?
Oh, some kind of blue thing.
Blue people. Avatar. What's this one called? Fire and Ash. Ash and Fire.
You're going to see that, are you?
No, I'm not. You're the one with the light card, so you can go in and technically it's not costing you anything.
I can't. I'm looking at my diary next week and...
I've got some ironing to do next week.
I've got stuff on, yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to see anything.
No, I think me neither.
No.
And people say, well, isn't that just typical of them? They think they're so much better than everyone else.
I think what I'm going to do is watch some Christmas films this week that we talked about. I'm not going to go and see Avatar.
No, I'm not, because I'm not convinced. And I know both of us in our own ways aren't very fair to Avatar, but they are just such blank, weird films that nobody remembers them.
It would be fair for me to go and see it, because I haven't seen any of the other Avatar.
I'm not sure if it matters. I mean, they all look the same. Oh, no, the special effects are much better in this one than what they were in the first. Really? Okay, then.
No, what we're saying is we're not going to bother.
We're not going to bother.
Sorry about that.
I'm going to be looking for, I don't know, a Brazilian human rights film or something to watch next week or set around Christmas. Or another Guatemalan ghost story. But yeah, no, I can't be arsed with it. Yeah. It's CBA for
go and see the Muppet Christmas Carol instead.
Oh, I've got that. Line. Yeah, I've got all
the Christmas films.
Elf is there. I haven't seen Elf for a year or two. And you know, just dig around and also find some of the stuff which isn't the stuff they feed you every Christmas. There are some great Christmas movies out there.
Hiding on streaming services as well.
Yes, yeah. Good ones. You know, just do a search for, you know, Christmas movies, even on something like IMDb, and you will find something that either you didn't realise was a Christmas film or is completely new to you. And sometimes just take a risk, because I think Comfort and Joy, as you were saying,
if you order Comfort and Joy now, you'll get it in a few days in the post.
There you are. There you are. Because physical media is coming back.
I hope so. I've got loads of it.
It's everywhere on YouTube. People saying that physical media is coming back.
Well, I think it's just the disappointment with
streaming and streaming in general.
Well, I'm going to mention that Carol is on.
There you go.
Which that's worth having a check out.
So we're going to be back next week for our final show before Christmas. I'm going to try and get John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John on next, but
we'll have to skip one.
We are. Oh, don't worry, I've got that. So if there's a bit of a glitch here before it starts up, I apologise in advance.
They're doing a gender swap on a classic, aren't they?
Enjoy your movies and back next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening's been, so very nice.
Been hoping, John, that you'd drop
my
in.
My mother will start to worry.
Oh, hold your hands that just
and
like
father
ice.
Father will be pacing the floor.
Handsome, what's your hurry?
So really, I'd better scurry. Well, maybe just a half a drink more.
Put some records on while I
the neighbors might think.
But baby, it's cold out there.
Say, hey, what's in that drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight now. I'll take your hat. Your hair looks
I
well.
I ought to say no, no, no.
Mind if I'm moving closer?
At least they're gonna say that. try.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't stay.
Oh, baby, don't hold on.
The baby is cold.